Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Look it, squeaked 4-year-old Max, holding up a large paper decorated with big splashes of color. I made it at school. Oh, my, Max's dad looked at his son's creation. What great colors, buddy. I used my fingers, Max smiled happily. This one and this one. As he held up a finger from each hand, his painting slid to the floor. What's that? Max's 8-year-old brother Ben walked in, cradling a muddy soccer ball. I made it myself, beamed Max. At school, he added importantly. Ben wrinkled his nose. That? Why'd they let you do that? What's it supposed to be, anyway? Max's face fell. He bent down to pick up his picture and then stopped halfway. Where should we hang this? Their dad inquired. The refrigerator or your room, Max? Max stood up. His painting still lay on the floor. He turned and began to walk away. I don't want it. It's not good. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about children's art experiences? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest focuses on creative experiences with young children. Susan Ackman finds great joy in setting up an environment or an experience that allows children to create and explore a medium. She views the process as more important than any product and likes to see children discover new ways to use materials. She's currently providing creative experiences for children who are 2 and 3 years old in a nursery school. In the past, she has conducted workshops for educators and parents, taught at the university level in demonstration early childhood programs, served as president of the board of the National Child Research Center, co-founded a parent association in a school of about 800 students, and has been working with children since she was 13 years old. She has 2 grown children, a son and a daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Susan.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Why should youngsters have hands-on art experiences?
Well, they learn about the world through manipulating materials. First of all, they'll find out, how do you make orange? If you mix red and yellow, what happens? How hard is the clay? What happens when I roll my hands together with a ball of clay? Can I create a squirrel? Can I make a body out of something that's wood? How does the glue work? If I want to stick something together, what am I going to use? What material? There's a way they can express their emotions through art. They're angry, they can pound the clay, or they can get in with the finger paint and just push and shove, and they can make swooshes and swirls, and you can channel some of their anger. They also like to make decisions, and it's a learning process. What happens if I have 2 pieces of wood and I want to add sticks to it? Or how many cubes is it going to take to fill up a square? Their senses are on alert always when they're working with art. They're smelling the paint or they're touching it. And many times with young children, they will use both hands if they can get 2 paintbrushes and go. And I've seen children use 2 paintbrushes in each hand and go with 4. It's just the process of manipulating the materials brings them a whole new dimension of knowledge.
And an art experience doesn't necessarily have to be paper and paint. It could be sticks in the playground, right?
Sticks in the playground, sand. You can take a walk. You're at the beach drawing in the sand and watching the waves come in and what happens, or making castles. Those are all art experiences. And with infants, just going around and having a child putting a baby's hand on wood, on the trees, and talk about it's rough. And that's art for young babies.
Is there a developmentally best age to begin art experiences?
As an infant, you know, when you're reading a story and you're talking about the yellow sun or the pink pig, or you're walking around and you put a baby's hand in, well, his food, for one thing, when he's playing with food, his early finger paint.
They do that.
Early finger paint. But for hands-on experiences with markers or pencils, I think 1-year-olds, many times, as soon as they can grasp and they want to have a large sheet of paper, and it can even be newspaper, you have to be with them at that point because they will put it in their mouth. But if they start making scribbles at that age, 1s and 2s easily can do many, many things. I've been blown away what an 18-month-old can do when you sit down with them and you provide materials and just show them a couple of things and they go with it, whether it's a marker or crayons or paint or clay. I've never met a child who did not like Play-Doh. Now, I've met children who do not like finger paint are gooey things, but Play-Doh can absorb a child for hours. And water play. I think of water as another way of art. Our medium, some people don't think of it, but if you give a kid a bucket and a big paintbrush and they go outside or paint a cardboard box, a little one loves to do that. And that's beginning art because they're using it in the bathtub. There's some kinds of bathtub finger paints you can use. All of those things are early art.
And it seems to me no matter what age they are, particularly the earlier ages, they're absorbed more in the process than in the product, and they get done with whatever masterpiece they've done, and they're through. You're figuring out where to hang it, and they're on to the next thing. And
the one thing I think we all need to do, and parents and your little 8-year-old brother, you need to be very respectful of a child's work. And what I'm finding is that around 2.5, they start telling you stories while they're working with their art. And this is a train, and da-da-da-da-da, and I'm climbing up the elevator, and here's a dragon coming in, and they have these very fanciful stories that go with it. I try to usually write notes on the back, not on the front of the painting, for the parent to know what the child said. But when they take that home, and if the parent says, oh, I see you've done a dragon, they probably will look at it and will have forgotten it's a dragon at that point. Sometimes they will remember. But the first scribbling is just the process. I mean, it's the creating to see how the material works. And they'll overlap. You'll have a child who will, at age 3, draw something representational like a snowman. And then the blizzard comes, and you never see that snowman again. He's under about 7 other stories by the time he finishes. They layer their work, which is, I think, very interesting. I can say to a parent, under that is a snowman, but the blizzard came, and then it changes very differently.
We have a photograph of my granddaughter, who was about 2.5 in preschool, when she was given a jar of paint and a paintbrush, and she proceeded to paint her hand all up and down. And then she made handprints. So we have the picture of her blue hand right next to her handprints hanging up. It was just adorable. She wanted to see what the paint felt like on her hand.
A lot of children do that. And so when we first start with finger paint, and it's more than just for young children. I know we're talking about young children, but your middle school children will enjoy Play-Doh just as much as a 2-year-old because it's something very soothing. But paint, again, with all ages, they're going to want to explore with their hands. Sometimes there's even fingerprint art with middle school where they take thumbprints and add little features to it to make a drawing. But with young children, when we start finger painting, usually you'll look and it goes from the elbows down. By the time they finish, I always turn over the artwork in that case and have the children put their handprints on the back just so the parents have a representation of the age level they had. I always try to date the work, too, for parents. I think that's important.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on art experiences for kids.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Susan Ackman about art experiences for children. We're skirting around this, but it seems like the elephant in the room always is the representational piece. Are we supposed to look to see if it looks like whatever it is? Are we not supposed to? And are the kids fixated at a certain age or stage? How do we deal with that?
Well, you're going to have some 3s who will begin to name the drawings. Age 4, 3.5 to age 4, you'll see the first stick figures, which are usually a circle and the arms and necks, arms and legs, everything comes out of the round circle or the oval, the face. And they will put the features that are important to them. I had twins one time who had these big belly buttons always in their work. Or you have a cochlear implant child who, when he draws, puts the cochlear implant actually on the figure because that's part of his body. Little girls sometimes become obsessed with eyelashes, and you'll have huge eyelashes and they'll be missing arms and legs, It's a feature. So they name the painting first. They'll have a story about it. And then gradually, 5, 6, you'll be able to recognize exactly what the figure is. There comes a block at, I think, around 7 or 8, when children began to get very nervous about drawing because they can't represent what they want. They want to have a very elaborate drawing, and they become frustrated. So in that case, I suggest doing different things. Get away from the drawing and use three-dimensional clay. Have them create with clay or Play-Doh, wood sculptures, wire sculptures. Take paper and show them how to fringe it with cutting or roll long pieces together. So you will expand a little bit on the basic stuff and show them new techniques. And that releases their creativity again and gets them over this sort of block. It's sort of like a writer's block. I call it a childhood block with their drawing. And many times you'll have young children who will say, show me how, or I can't draw that. How do I draw that? And that's a very touchy thing because they really want to have a representational thing. They're not ready to do it. So you have to sort of play with it a little bit. I usually will say, well, here's a circle. Now, what do you think we could do to this circle to add on it if they wanted to make a dog? And then we work with it that way a little bit. But I try to get them to do their own work. I really don't want my style in there. Sometimes in the spring of the year when we're talking about plants and trees and flowers, I'll bring in all sorts of flowers and we'll talk about, well, how would you make this plant if you were doing it? What kinds of shapes could we use that would help you draw something like that? And it's fascinating what kids will do, but if I draw one, it's all going to look just like mine.
We had one of our sons who was very artistic hit that stage about age 5 or 6 when whatever he wanted to represent didn't look to him or his classmates or whoever like it was supposed to look. And so, you know, he came home complaining. And so we happened to have an abstract art book in the house, and we gave that to him. And it was very interesting. First, it was amazing to him that grown-ups got away with doing that. That was the first thing, and that it was called art, and that was okay. And he took it to bed with him for about 3 months. So it was very significant.
Yes, it is important for children to have something that they really care about, but to feel it's inadequate is very sad to me. I like to have a child feel very positive about his experience. So you have to work with that. And sometimes children are just frustrated, and you'll have to say, maybe you just need to put it down for a while and come back and try it another time.
Often they can tell you what it is, even though, of course, you can't tell. I remember my youngest son creating a clay sculpture. We had, of course, no idea what it was, but he was extremely proud of it. He was very young, and maybe it was Play-Doh, I don't remember, but he brings it in and he says, look what I made. What is that? Snoopy making BM on the body.
Yes, now four-year-olds become very interested in body parts and also the waist parts. So you will see a lot of poo-poo and doo-doo and the typical bathroom language at that point. And I just acknowledge it and go on. I don't make a to-do about it. Children will paint what they're very concerned or what attracts them or what they're interested in. You can always, if I had a child that had done a wall climbing, she was 8, and she did a drawing for me the next day and sent it, and it was of her climbing the wall. And I knew she had climbed the wall because you could tell where she had put the little hand grasp and the toe grasp. There was no doubt at all that she had climbed that because the proportion of her to the wall, it was this huge, giant thing, and then she was a little person climbing up. But it meant something to her. She had had that experience. And with a child going through potty training many times, that can come out in art.
So when we look at the creation that Jimmy has brought home, and it's beautiful colors or not so beautiful colors, and he's very proud of it, what do we say?
Tell me about it. Or if he's very excited, the first comment to say is, you're very happy with what you created today. You've made lots of blue, or how did you do this color? Did you use 20 circles and count the circles? I see zigzags. Try to give them words that expand their vocabulary that will help them to describe their art in the future or become critiques of art. Children need to know words like zigzag, fat, thick, thin. Use the basic elements of art. I mean, think in terms of textures, rough, smooth. I see you did a zigzag here, but you did a fat line or a thick line. Give them words to explain their work to you in the future. And then give it validation. Hang it up somewhere. maybe you have one spot that's the art board. If it's the refrigerator, so be it. I've seen some families who have one bulletin board, and that's where the art goes for a period of time. Now, I had a wonderful suggestion this year from a parent that she had seen this, and I thought it was a fabulous idea. To save children's art becomes a real problem. Some people use under-the-bed storage boxes, portfolios. They'll have large picture frames that they put one painting in for a period of time and then take it down. But now with all the digital things, you can take photographs of it and actually send it off to those places like Snapfish or Kodak and make small books. And this woman had taken a picture of her child and had done a little bio about him and put it in the front of the book and then had his artwork. And then she didn't have to keep all those things. I have them still, my children's masks hanging up all over the house and the three-dimension sculptures. But after 30 years, they're beginning to crumble. And I'm thinking, I wish I had taken pictures of some of these. Validation and respect for the art is the most important thing.
We had a little validation story in our family where my aunt, when her children were young, walked into a hallway in her upstairs and found that someone had decorated it with crayons all over the wall. And of course, no one was responsible. She had four young children. Nobody was responsible. And so finally, she stood in front of it and said, "This is very interesting. You know, there are red lines and orange lines." And behind her, a little voice said, "Yes, and there's a little green."
I try to avoid, it's beautiful or I love it, because I don't want them creating for me. I want them creating for themselves.
And there's also a value judgment then that they expect adults to put on their work.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on art experiences for kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Susan Ackman about art experiences for kids.
And you'll find children who represent their families according to size, too. The father will be very big, or maybe it's a tall mother. Mm-hmm. Children are smaller. And many times siblings are left out. That's probably not true.
Are there any outcomes that you've seen that were kind of surprising as a result of children's participation in arts activities?
Well, I've seen some amazing creations that children do, and I use the word creations or art experiences. I had a child who was very interested in plants and flowers, and he every day would come with a new plant, and everybody was concerned he was too much into these flowers, and I kept saying, "He's fine, you know, he's exploring, he's learning about the colors and all." And at age three, he could draw a lily as well as anybody 15 or 20, because he knew what that lily was. He could smell it. He had touched it. He knew how it stamens and exactly what the pollen was going to do to his hands. I also had a child, and this child was hearing impaired. And his father had been killed in an airplane crash several years before. He was age five, and he started drawing unbelievable maps, just beautiful maps. He would draw South America. He would draw the world. He would draw North America. And his mother was a student teacher in a geography class, and she was doing a lot with maps with her students. And I thought, well, maybe that's where he's getting it from. But he would come in and take a huge piece of newsprint and from scratch just draw things. And then he would label them. I never will forget Montevideo. I mean, I couldn't even pronounce it, and he had this huge long word he had written out at age five, and he would have them all exactly right. This went on for at least 6 or 7 months.
But you let it go on.
We let it go on because it was something important to him, and he was drawing these amazing reproductions. I mean, they were visually almost, you could almost put the one map on top of a real map and it would be exact. It was unbelievable. And finally, his grandmother came and they were looking at maps. And he said, "Where is heaven?" And someone had told him, when he asked, where is Daddy, that he was in heaven. And so he had been trying to find the place where his father was. She drew at the top of one of his maps and labeled heaven and went outside and showed him the sky. And the map ceased at that point. He didn't have that need anymore.
He was searching and
He was searching and searching. And twins, identical twins, many times their art would be so similar that you just know that this set of twins did it. You might not be able to distinguish which twin is which. And sometimes in families, you'll have a child. I've had the older child and then the younger child come, and they will have almost the same technique. So there must be some kind of genetic length in the way children create. I'm not quite sure how. Or maybe it's learned that he's watched his sister do this, so he layers and puts lots of things on his work, too, just the way she does. I'm not sure.
But to give children permission to use art in their own way for their own purposes seems to me a very important concept.
I do a soccer carpool for a group of little boys who are 11, and sometimes the language is not quite appropriate. You can imagine 11-year-old boys. This one child told me that he wanted me to see something he had drawn. And he said, "This is my inappropriate notebook."
Oh, how funny.
And the teacher had given him permission to put certain things he couldn't do it in things that the regular students and parents could see, but he had his inappropriate notebook. That's an extreme version of that. But I think, again, you have to watch what children are doing, because it can be a clue of anger. It can be a clue of sadness. You may have a child who's lost a parent who's extremely depressed, and you can start seeing some of that in their artwork. And you'll also have the child who is very hesitant to use a material. Now, I've had shy children before who are scared to use finger paint. But they'll come and stand, and you can almost see they want to do it, but their bodies won't let them. So you give them a brush and let them work with a brush. And other children will say, "I want a brush." And I'll say, "Well, this Johnny's going to use the brush today. You're using your hands." But gradually, the child will then become familiar with the material, and it won't become too much for him to handle. But some children do not like certain tactile things. And if you use hard clay, regular clay, and I always bring in a block of clay and keep them moist, roll them into balls and put them in Tupperware or plastic containers, they'll last a long time. Play-Doh and this commercial dough is very different from real moist soil or clay. And we talk about where clay comes from, and they'll touch it. But at first, it takes them a while to get into it.
It seems like we need to give children and ourselves, really, permission to explore without having a completed production in mind.
Oh, yes. I never say we're going to draw flowers today. Sometimes I'll bring in flowers and we'll talk about them, and I'll put them on the table where the art materials, and you'll see children will then start drawing flowers, but otherwise they'll do their own thing. And it's, again, you have to explore the material. And I approach it the same way as a child. When I have a new medium, I see how it works. A lot of people give little kids watercolors. I don't like to give them to little kids because I think they're very frustrating to use. But 4-year-old can, once you show them how to dip it in water and do the brush, they can do some watercolors. Whereas a 8 or a 10-year-old would love to have a nice set of watercolors and manipulate it and work with it. And scissors. Young children want scissors. They physically cannot do it. I will not introduce scissors until age 4. When you have scissors, you want a decent pair. So I wait until about 4 to do that.
Susan, we like to leave our listeners with some resources, some suggestions. Can you provide that?
The Marianne Cole series, she has Scribble Art, First Art. She has several. Amazon.com has a list of her books. She's very good for young children. For middle-aged children, there's the Usborne, U-S-B-O-R-N-E. He has several series of books on teaching children how to make prints, different ways of using paper. Those are very good. You can also just Google children's art ideas and you come up with many, many resources. Those are some basic things. And places to get materials. You can get them from Target, Walmart. There's a discount school supply that has very inexpensive materials. If you want to invest in a few more unusual items, you can go there. Variety stores, grocery stores have crayons and all. And each child needs to have their materials in clear boxes so they can see it. I'd like to have
a set area for children to work. And I use plastic shower curtain liners to cover the tables, and then the children can work right on it. But I like to have the art materials sort of separated, that they know where the crayons are, the markers.
Is it true that the smaller the child, the bigger the manipulatives that they need, like big crayons for little hands?
Yes, but you'll find that sometimes children really want to use the smaller version. But start with big markers, and sidewalk chalk is wonderful for little tiny kids and infants. And I say infants 6 months old can make scribbles with big sidewalk chalk.
And great big pieces of paper rather than the little sketch pads.
Yes.
Well, this has been a very inspiring and very exciting conversation. So a lot of us have gotten ideas of things we can do with our children to create art experiences. So Susan Ackman, thank you so much for being with us today.
I've loved it.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 449 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programming. Parents Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect, iGive.com, or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can mail checks to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.